unfortunately quite faulty. People are intimidated into voting for ruling parties, and people who have voted for these parties are not seeing their representatives. So people are being very vocally angry and against them. In terms of NGOs, there is definitely a very large presence of NGOs, but they themselves are spread very thin. You have organizations such as Legal Aid Society, which is in fact what it says, a legal aid society, is going from legal work to going on boats and distributing rations or food to people who cannot be accessed. And there's also a law in Pakistan which limits NGOs and has actually banned several NGOs. So a lot of NGOs that might be able to take up the labor of doing this have not been able to.
It may shock people to know that there's more glacial ice, more glaciers in Pakistan than any place on Earth outside of the polar region. And in 10 seconds, Zulfikar, if you could comment on your being critical of the IMF for bankrolling massive dams and barrages that have broken during this flooding.
You know, as you said, the glaciers are Pakistan's water storage, and there's been this idea that water should not go to the sea. But what happens when water does not go to the sea is that it does not reach the people of the sea. And the first climate refugees in Pakistan were, in fact, those in the 1960s who had to flee the delta when the IMF built a Kotri barrage. So the IMF has been responsible for a great deal of our
water. We have to end it there. I thank you so much for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. KBOO News is proud to present our 2022 Citizens Agenda Survey, and we want to hear your thoughts as we approach the midterm election. What do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes? Let us know, and you can be entered into a sweepstakes to win a $50 Visa gift card as a thank you. Plus, it will help our volunteer reporters cover the election with the info that you need to know. Find the survey online at bit.ly/KBOO-survey. That's KBOO's 2022 Citizens Agenda Survey, available online through September 25th at bit.ly/KBOO-survey.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, new rules about who in Oregon is eligible for the monkeypox vaccine, a deal that could possibly solve the railroad strike crisis, and another to rid the West of abandoned oil and gas wells. And why so many Americans believe in conspiracy theories. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, September 15th, 2022. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. A railroad labor agreement has tentatively been worked out, possibly averting a strike, which would have caused major disruptions to United States commerce. KBOO's Josh Salem has more on the story.
President Biden announced today that a tentative railway labor agreement had been reached, likely averting a strike that could have been economically devastating for the United States. The railroads and union representatives were in negotiations for 20 hours at the Labor Department yesterday, hammering out a deal. Otherwise, a strike might have begun tomorrow, shutting down railways across the country. Biden called Labor Secretary Marty Walsh late last night. The president told negotiators to consider the widespread potential to families and businesses if a shutdown occurred. A strike would have disrupted passenger and freight rail lines because Amtrak and many commuter railroads operate on the same tracks owned by the freight railroads. Amtrak had already canceled a number of its long-distance trains this week, and was planning for the rest of its long-distance trains to stop today. ahead of the strike deadline. Following the tentative agreement, the company said it was working to restore canceled trains. The five-year deal, retroactive to 2020, includes the 24% raises and $5,000 in bonuses that a presidential emergency board recommended earlier this summer. But railroads also agreed to ease strict attendance policies to address some of the union's concerns about working conditions. For example, railroad workers will now be able to take unpaid days off for doctor's appointments without being penalized. The possibility of a shutdown had put Biden in a strange spot politically. He has been very pro-union, but knew a rail strike could damage the economy ahead of the midterms. A rail stoppage could have cost the economy $2 billion per day. Some experts also felt a stoppage would worsen soaring inflation rates. The upcoming election is particularly critical to Democrats, when majorities in both chambers of Congress, key governorships, and a number of important state offices all depend on the ballot. Senate Republicans tried yesterday to pass a law imposing contract terms on the unions and railroad companies to avoid a shutdown. Democrats blocked it. Biden said, quote, "These rail workers will get better pay, improved working conditions, and peace of mind around their health care costs, all hard-earned. The agreement is also a victory for railway companies, who will be able to retain and recruit more workers for an industry that will continue to be part of the backbone of the American economy for decades to come," end quote. The tentative agreement will go to union members for a vote after a post-ratification cooling-off period of several weeks. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
The Oregon Health Authority announced it has expanded its vaccination eligibility for the monkeypox outbreak. The eligibility now includes anyone who has or is expected to have direct skin-to-skin contact with anyone in their social circles or communities who've had monkeypox. The basis for the new vaccine guidelines is input and data comprised from local health authorities, healthcare providers, tribal health organizations, and statewide community partners. Before this expansion, eligibility was primarily based on people due to their sexual orientation or gender identity, with cisgender men, transgender women, and non-binary people who've had sex with men identified as the highest risk for virus transmission. The current vaccines administered in a two-dosage series, with CDC officials urging people to get both doses within the recommended 28-day window of initial inoculation. OHA has also extended vaccination recommendations to other at-risk groups, including anyone who has shared proximity with an infected person, lab workers who routinely perform monkeypox virus testing, and clinicians who have had or have occupational high-risk exposure. It's the end of an era for one community in Oregon. KBOO's Jeffrey Wade explains.
Residents of Morrow County in eastern Oregon said goodbye today to the last remaining coal-fired power plant in Oregon with the demolition of the smokestack and facility near Boardman. The Portland General Electric shuttered plant was demolished by contractors this morning by strategically placed explosives that toppled the 656-foot-tall stack, also collapsing the adjoined boiler building. PGE permanently closed Boardman's doors in October of 2020, 20 years ahead of a scheduled air pollution agreement aimed at ending fossil fuel emissions in the state that was established in 2010. The plant had been in operation since 1980. Video documentation of the demolition was posted live via social media, though the utility's Facebook page did not have comments on the event enabled. Spokespeople from PGE summed up the event with a note of bittersweet regard, noting although ample resources of clean and renewable energy are available for the Pacific Northwest, the plant at Boardman was considered, quote, the workhorse of the state's energy supply fleet for over 40 years. Residential sentiment also was reflective on the plant's demolition, with 125 jobs permanently eradicated. Though current economic conditions in Morrow County has grown in diversifying income through renewable energy resource projects and Amazon data centers. Electricity from Boardman has been replaced by PGE with short-term contracts purchased from other generators, with emphasis on accelerating current projects, including a proposed company-owned 50-megawatt solar farm located on the previous plant site. An estimated 2 million tons of greenhouse gas emissions, equal to roughly 430,000 passenger cars' annual pollution, has been eliminated since the plant's closure. The last remaining coal plant in the Pacific Northwest following Boardman's demolition is now the Centralia, Washington-based TransAlta coal plant, which has current plans to stop burning coal by 2025. With the KBOO Evening News, I'm Jeffrey Wade.
Las Vegas is getting ready to mourn the fifth anniversary of a mass shooting in 2017. Suzanne Potter reports multiple events are planned, including a display of paper lanterns.
The five-year anniversary of the worst mass shooting in U.S. history is coming up on October 1st, and Las Vegas is preparing to honor the victims, survivors, and first responders. 58 people died and 867 people were injured when a gunman opened fire on the Route 91 Music Festival, shooting down from a room at the nearby Mandalay Bay Hotel. Tennille Pereira with the Vegas Strong Resiliency Center says the massacre still has the city on edge, citing a recent incident where someone threw a rock at a glass door at the MGM, causing a panic.
All the mass shootings across the nation has changed our mindset, where if glass breaks, we are automatically assuming that there's a shooter. The mass shootings have definitely changed the way the community responds to things.
This year's commemoration is called From the Darkest Night Comes the Strongest Light. The Vegas Strong Resiliency Center is giving away kits to make a lantern that can be displayed in people's front windows. On September 30th, they will sponsor a webinar with a mental health professional who will show people how to build the lantern. Sign up on the Vegas Strong website to receive a free lantern kit. Many other community events are planned on Saturday the 1st, including a sunrise remembrance ceremony and a concert called the Remember Music Festival at the Clark County Government Center. Pereira says the Vegas Strong Resiliency Center offers ongoing support groups and services for victims of the massacre and other types of crimes.
The truth is that you don't get over this. It changes you and it changes the community. And so it is important to mark that and recognize that and validate what people are going through.
Other community events to mark 1 October include a quilt exhibit, a blood drive, and a ceremony with reading of the names. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Conspiracy theories have moved from the margins to the mainstream in America, according to a new documentary series called Shadowland. I spoke to the filmmaker Joe Berlinger about the influence of conspiracy thinking on our democracy. Let's talk about your documentary series that you have. You know, there have been so many of these crazy stories about people believing conspiracy theories. What are you finding when you've come up with Shadowland? What are you finding that most surprised you?
What surprises me the most and why I did the series is just how mainstream these beliefs have become and how many people believe them. And the reason that's concerning is America has divided into two camps, basically. We demonize the other side. We name call. We don't have any dialogue. We just hate and disagree. And American democracy is, the foundation of American democracy is compromise and dialogue. And that's not happening, as we know. And so I didn't want to just do the typical story where we say why other people are wrong. I wanted to go out into the world and understand how and why people believe what they believe and how this has come about and why it's gone from the fringe to the mainstream, to see if we can do anything about it, because we have to start talking again to one another as a nation, or we will see authoritarianism take hold. Because the enemy of democracy is authoritarianism, and authoritarianism depends upon not agreeing on what the truth is. And so to me, it was shocking and surprising the degree to which families are being torn apart over beliefs. Local school board meetings have become places of extreme heated exchanges and sometimes death threats for school board members over differing beliefs. That's the country that we've become, and we need to figure out how this happened and what we can do about it.
You sent out teams basically to embed across the country with subjects who've rejected the mainstream, basically. Anything in the West?
We cover stories in California where family members are being, torn apart. We visit with family therapists who have small town in California, where 40 of this family therapist clients are all families being torn apart by QAnon issues. So even at the dinner table, we see this division in America.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me an illustration of something that somebody fervently believed that was obviously a dangerous and incorrect belief?
Yeah, well, we cover a guy named Christopher Key, who calls himself the vaccine police, and he warns against vaccines as a global plot to control people. He delivers chlorine dioxide as a cure for COVID. He gives it out but accepts donations. So obviously these are beliefs that we don't share. Chlorine dioxide is actually dangerous to consume on a daily basis and is not a preventative for COVID, in my opinion. Those are kind of some of the conspiracy theories we look at, and January 6th is a big part of it. We follow a woman who's owns a pizza shop in Pennsylvania, and if you were driving along the highway and decided to stop into her shop for a slice of pizza, you'd think she was a lovely person, but she fervently believes that the election was stolen and that the 13 wealthy families are ushering in a new world government. And obviously I don't share those beliefs, but she so fervently believes, and in every other regard you would consider her, you know, a normal person. So it's troubling how mainstream a lot of these beliefs have become.
Yeah, the person who had the vaccine activists, where were they from?
Louisiana.
And there's also a mother divorcing her husband because she fears his beliefs put their kids' lives in danger. Where was that? And tell us about that one.
Yes, this is a woman who had a very happy marriage, and her husband started following QAnon beliefs and actually said to his wife that, you know, he was receiving information downloaded to his brain from a deceased person, and she felt this was dangerous for her children and sought custody, and a judge did not agree with her, and so she shares custody still with her husband.
Wow. Okay. Why do you think, when you did all this research in this work, why do you think this is happening now? And what makes these theories so appealing to some people?
Well, I think COVID was a great accelerator of conspiracy theories. I mean, look, conspiracy theories have been around forever. There's a certain part of the brain with a certain group of people who become susceptible to conspiracy theories. It gives you a sense of belonging. It helps make sense of the world. But I think COVID greatly accelerated that. There was increasing isolation for some people. So a sense of belonging, a sense of greater purpose, is something that, you know, we find a lot of people who are susceptible to these conspiracy theories gravitate towards. The other factor is, you know, when terrible things happen, people need to have an explanation. Oh, COVID is happening, or my business is shutting down, so there must be a greater reason for this. But part of my belief as to why we've landed in this place is that for the last couple of decades, there's been this progressive eroding of the line between entertainment and news. There was once a time where there was only a handful of news networks, and there was an iron wall between the news division and the entertainment division. And with the rise of cable and the 24-hour news cycle and the need for ratings, you know, that line between entertainment and news became blurry. And so a lot of opinion journalism started happening. And that has only increased during Donald Trump's presidency. And then you add to it the fiery mix of social media, which is, you know, on the one hand, this incredible thing that has brought people together. Never in history could you find somebody with a like-minded interest, and that has its positive side and also has its negative side. And all the news, quote-unquote, news reporting on these sites, that is not vetted. So people have, you know, a lot of people only get their news from Facebook. And so I think our society has allowed a gradual erosion of objective news reporting and entertainment. And I think that's the biggest factor.
Did you find any cases of people coming to terms with, hey, I have a false belief here, and having that realization?
Honestly, everyone we covered from the beginning of the filming to the end of the filming firmly believe their positions.
Huh. What advice would you give to, say, family members or couples when, you know, their other partner is starting to kind of fall down the rabbit hole? Do you have any idea of what they should do or what they can do to get help?
Yeah, I think they should seek out counseling. I think it's something a family therapist needs to manage.
And when and where can people learn more about Shadowland?
It premieres on Peacock, the streaming platform on September 21st. We have 6 episodes, and they all become available at once if you want to watch all 6 in one sitting or spread it out as you like.
I really appreciate you spending some time with me today.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the good questions.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio with music and teepee talk. Then at 7, the Magical Mystery Tour featuring Jonathan Stahl's walking journey of 242 days. Tonight's weather, cloudy, 55 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, mostly cloudy skies continue, a high of 67. Today in history, on this date in 1821, Central American states were declared independent from the Spanish Empire by the Act of Independence of Guatemala. After independence, the regions became part of the Mexican Empire until they were ceded to become the Federal Republic of Central America in 1823. Our quote of the day is from artist Salvador Dali. The difference between false memories and true ones is the same as for jewels. It is always the false ones that look the most real, the most brilliant. Oil and gas well orphans are created when producers sell off leases through layers of limited liability corporations that can declare bankruptcy and just walk away. $25 million from the Bipartisan Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act are flowing to Wyoming for abandoned wells. As Eric Galatis reports, conservationists are urging the U.S. Bureau of Land Management to update financial obligations for producers to meet the actual costs of restoring well sites.
President Joe Biden's Bipartisan Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act is expected to bring more than 300 jobs to Wyoming to clean up and plug so-called orphaned oil and gas wells on public lands. Bob Laresh is a longtime advocate for restoring Wyoming's iconic landscapes after drilling. He says wells abandoned by oil and gas producers pose a serious hazard for drinking water, agriculture, and wildlife habitat.
They leak methane, they leak volatile organic compounds, which are toxic, and it just lasts forever. The casings will rust out and whatever's down below will come up and spread over the land. They're very destructive.
The U.S. Bureau of Land Management requires oil and gas operators to post bonds before drilling to ensure cleanup, but Laresh notes that bonds can be as low as $10,000 on leases with 20 separate wells. Industry groups and operators have pushed back against efforts to make bond amounts equal to the costs of restoration, arguing that price would reduce exploration, limit outputs, and increase dependency on foreign energy. More than 2,300 well sites have been abandoned by producers in Wyoming, according to a recent WildFile report. Laresh says most orphans are created when producers sell off leases through layers of limited liability corporations that can declare bankruptcy and walk away, leaving taxpayers on the hook for cleanup.
There's no reason that the federal government should take on the risk on behalf of us taxpayers for somebody who's not going to meet their legal obligation to clean up after themselves. Basically, if they can't afford it, then they're not qualified to purchase a lease.
Under the infrastructure legislation, the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is expected to receive $25 million for well site restoration. Laresh says that will not solve the underlying problem of current BLM policies before drilling begins.
BLM does not require enough bonds when they issue a drilling permit to guarantee that the wells will be cleaned up by the companies that should be cleaning them up, that are legally obligated to clean them up.
Vermont U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders sided with unions with a possible railroad strike. President Biden touts electric vehicles in Detroit. And a new poll shows inflation and reproductive rights are top issues for Latino voters. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2022 Talks.
What the freight rail industry is saying to its workers is this: it doesn't matter if you have COVID. It doesn't matter if you are lying in a hospital bed because of a medical emergency. It doesn't matter if your wife just gave birth to your child.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders blocked a Republican request Wednesday to force railroad workers and companies to accept the recommendations of a nonpartisan panel to avoid the strike. In Detroit Wednesday at the North American International Auto Show, President Joe Biden touted the nation's transition to electric vehicles under the Inflation Reduction Act, which provides billions for EV production and incentives for U.S.-based chip manufacturing.
We invented that little computer chip. We invented it here in the United States of America. We don't have to rely on other countries to power smartphones, washing machines, automobiles, and so much more.
Polls continue to show inflation is a top priority for voters, including Latino voters. The National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials voter tracking poll released Wednesday showed top issues have changed for Latinos in recent years. Executive Director Arturo Vargas.
Nearly half of Latinos have expressed the rising cost of living and inflation as the most important issue on their mind as they are getting ready to vote in November. But number two is women's reproductive and abortion rights, comes in at 28%.
Democrats, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, continue to slam Republicans for anti-abortion legislation.
As they criminalize women's freedom to make their own choices, we have passed legislation to support freedom for women.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
Federal officials tour uranium cleanup efforts by the Navajo Nation. Crazy Horse Memorial hosts a Native college student summer program. And tribal leaders celebrate the Inflation Reduction Act with President Biden. With these stories and more, here's National Native News.
Leaders on the Navajo Nation report progress and efforts to clean up hundreds of abandoned uranium mines on and near the reservation. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, federal officials recently traveled to the area for a firsthand view of the decades-long issue.
U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Michael Regan met with tribal officials in Cameron, Arizona on the Navajo Nation. During the trip, he announced the creation of two federal field offices in the tribal capital Window Rock and in Flagstaff, Arizona, that'll work with the Navajo EPA to facilitate the mine cleanup and removal of radioactive waste. U.S. EPA officials also say they're working to conduct assessments and prioritize the more than 300 abandoned uranium mines that haven't yet received funding for remediation. According to Navajo President Jonathan Nez's office, Regan also visited an abandoned uranium mine site located within feet of occupied homes. The effort to clean up the more than 500 abandoned uranium mines on and near the Navajo Nation has been ongoing for years, and only a handful have been fully remediated. The tribe says about 200 sites currently have funds available for work, but progress has been slow. Tribal leaders describe the legacy of uranium mining on the Navajo Nation as devastating, causing decades of negative environmental and health impacts among residents and former mine workers. Between 1944 and 1986, 30 million tons of uranium ore was extracted from the area to support the Manhattan Project and Cold War-era nuclear weapons development. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
A new partnership between Black Hills State and the Indian University of North America expands a student support program. This summer, it gave 25 undergrads a chance to jumpstart their college careers. South Dakota Public Broadcasting CJ Keene has more.
The 7th Gen Summer Program prepares Native students for success in college. Joshua Rudnick is director of the Indian University at Crazy Horse Memorial. He says the program helps teenagers take the next step.
7th Gen Summer Program here at Crazy Horse is for high school students who have just graduated and looking to move into higher education. During the summer, they participate in their first semester of college. They earn 12 credits. Those are general education credits.
Along with classes, students live on a small campus and work a credit-eligible internship at the memorial. Rudnick says the experience goes beyond the classroom.
It's a busy summer, not only with the classes, but the 20 hours that they work. In addition to the classes and the internship, we also have a co-curricular program that seeks to explore these culturally significant sites here in the Black Hills.
Rudnick says the new partnership will provide some Black Hills State professors for classes and help students connect.
Well, if you're looking into getting into college, our program is a good start. Not only do we provide your first semester of college with those 12 credits, but we also have a pretty strong student advising and student success team.
Applications are closed for the summer 2023 program. Rudnick expects them to reopen in coming months. For National Native News in Rapid City, I'm CJ Keene.
Tribal leaders were among those to join President Biden for a celebration of the Inflation Reduction Act on the White House lawn this week. The president signed the bill last month. The new law authorizes funding, including tribal-specific funding, to address climate issues and energy. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Student loan advocacy groups are calling on the U.S. Education Department to audit the Public Student Loan Forgiveness Program. As Brett Pevedo reports, they say the student debt relief package is not doing enough to address racial equity gaps among student loan borrowers.
The Biden administration's recent move to cancel some student debt is welcome news to many, but challenges remain for others. The racial equity gap among student loan borrowers is known to be a problem, with studies documenting a number of troubling statistics over time. U.S. Department of Education research has illustrated that the average black student loan recipient owes more than the original amount borrowed 12 years after entering college, and that 20 years after entering school, the average black borrower owes 95% of his or her original debt. Kyle Thompson with the Ohio-based Center for Community Solutions says it's important to look at the larger picture when trying to understand the different outcomes among borrowers.
I think one of the important things that comes into this is really just recognizing that in a lot of cases, the economic conditions that black students coming into school with, whether it's some structural things that's making it hard for them to be able to stay in school or even graduate school and then find opportunities that can help them pay off their loan.
Thompson says these realities impact black people's abilities to achieve life milestones such as home ownership. One way the federal government has attempted to give relief to borrowers was through the Public Student Loan Forgiveness Program, created to offer loan forgiveness to public sector and nonprofit workers who made consistent payments for 10 years. The program was created in 2007 with the first group of borrowers eligible for relief in 2017. Thompson says that's when problems with the program became apparent.
When people were first eligible for forgiveness and they began to apply in 2017, the U.S. Department of Education realized there were some problems with it, and that's because fewer than 5% of applicants were approved for loan forgiveness.
The Biden administration has added some temporary flexibility to the program with new rules that, among other things, include giving borrowers credit for past payments that had been disqualified previously. That waiver period is currently set to expire on October 31st.
You're listening.